You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International, in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
I'm Catherine Lanfer in for John Hockenberry. Now, Adora, we were talking earlier, new census numbers that show more women are delaying motherhood or forgoing it entirely. We want to know how you have made the choice whether to have children or not. I mean, obviously, it's not an easy decision or a simple one. So let us know at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org. Meanwhile, you pick up any piece of analysis on the conflict between Russia and Georgia, and it seems that eventually you read a phrase about how Russia is emboldened by its petrochemical wealth so much that it can now set about to restore its empire. We're going to turn now to Chrystia Freeland. She's the United States Managing Editor at the Financial Times. Turning to her for a conversation about money, empire, and the return of authoritarianism. She joins us by phone. Welcome to The Takeaway.
Good morning.
Now, Russia is the second highest producer of oil behind the Saudis. How straight a line can we actually draw between its behavior in Georgia and its petrochemical wealth?
I think oil money, and it's also a function of the very high price of oil that we're experiencing right now, has had a really big impact on what we're seeing Russia doing in Georgia and on what we have seen happening inside Russia, in Russia's political development. The political scientists talk about something they call the curse of oil, and I think we've really seen that operating in Russia. What that oil money has done is it has allowed Vladimir Putin, now the prime minister, formerly the president, to simultaneously increase prosperity in the country. You know, people are doing better than they did in the Yeltsin years without actually reforming the political system. So we've had this sort of terrible confluence of Russia becoming simultaneously richer and more authoritarian. And I think one of the consequences we're seeing of those two processes is Russia having the money and having the sort of nasty internal political regime, which makes it possible to have this attack on Georgia.
The curse of oil makes it sound like it's applicable not to just Russia.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, countries like maybe Norway or Britain with the North Sea oil or my own native Alberta, which are established Western democracies, seem to be able to deal with, you know, basically, you know, it's like money falling from the sky. Oil money isn't like Silicon Valley, where you need a sophisticated, open, functioning market economy to have all this wealth. You just need to be able to drill. So if you have an established Western democracy, you're able to sort of cope with that inflow of money. It seems not to corrupt the system too much. But in what was a very fragile democracy like Russia, in countries like Nigeria, I think we're seeing it also in the Gulf states, when you have all this money coming in, the pressure on governments to be responsive to their citizens, to create the sorts of structures that produce, you know, the kind of wealth that manufacturing or financial services or technology deliver, is reduced.
Exactly what kind of bargaining power has this wealth given Russia right now?
Well, I think that it's done a couple of things. You know, in the 1990s, a big conversation that happened between Russia and the West was between Russia and the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. And there was a real sense that Russia was financially dependent not only on Western investment, but also on Western financial institutions to sort of prop it up. Russia doesn't need the West in that way anymore. Mm. And that is a really big factor. The other thing is the particular source of wealth that Russia has now. The oil, and more specifically the natural gas, mean that at a moment when North America, Europe are thinking about what leverage they have over Russia, Russia, in fact, has very great leverage over them. Western Europe is hugely dependent on Russian natural gas right now.
And Chrystia, the Russians are very aware of that. We just spoke with the ambassador to NATO, who said essentially that the world is dealing with a different Russia now.
I think that's absolutely true. The one thing that I think is also important to realize, which I think Russian diplomats, naturally enough, tend not to highlight, is that even as we see this resurgent, this aggressive Russia, inside Russia, in the Kremlin, there's also a real anxiety and a real fragility, you know, the inevitable fragility of authoritarian regimes. They know that right now, Vladimir Putin, right now, this sort of muscular nationalism is very popular. But they've also seen the what is called the Rose Revolution in Georgia, the Orange Revolution in Ukraine, where they saw authoritarian leaders knocked down by popular protests. That's very frightening to them, and I think that's another explanation for the actions we've seen in Georgia, because a great way to build up your popularity is by sort of fanning the flames of domestic nationalism.
Well, one last question here. Isolation is a real danger for them here. I mean, even though they have all of this wealth and they have leverage, they still need a market for their oil, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that given our dependency on oil and given the very high price, the Russians don't need to worry that people are going to stop buying Urals crude anytime soon. But I do think that there are important Western markets, important Western, specifically financial institutions that the Russians want to be part of. The World Trade Organization, the WTO, is a big one. Russia hasn't been admitted yet. I think that these events are going to mean, they should mean, that Russia isn't allowed to join.
All
and
right.
I think that is an important point of leverage.
Chrystia, I want to thank you for joining us this morning.
Pleasure, Catherine.
Chrystia Freeland, U.S. Managing Editor for the Financial Times. Now we're going to turn to our own newsroom. Femi Okeh is here with the latest headlines. Hey, Femi.